The joint U.S. and Israeli airstrikes to close out February and start the latest stage of war came after months of fluctuating tensions, where the countries had been negotiating with Iran about scaling back its nuclear and missiles programs. The first wave of strikes killed Iran's supreme leader, who has since been replaced by his son, indicating that the 17th largest country in the world will continue responding against the attacks. While the regime had many detractors and was not democratic, UNC history and international affairs professor Klaus Lares said the U.S. tact of firing airstrikes during active negotiations raises questions about President Donald Trump and his administration's strategy.
It's not a democratic regime by any stretch of the imagination. It certainly doesn't know the word human rights. It has only recently killed apparently over 30,000 protesters. So it is a bad and evil regime even. However, was war the only possibility to deal with that regime? One wonders whether there was no other option.
The main takeaway from Lares, as well as chair of UNC's political science department, Navin Bapat, in conversations with 97.9 The Hill, is the lack of a clear goal of this escalation from the U.S. president and military. So far, the Trump administration has simply said it will end when Iran unconditionally surrenders and no longer poses a threat to the U.S. and its allies. Bapat said that messaging is still leaving many experts and world leaders wondering why start a war now and how it ultimately ends.
If we compare it to past military adventures by the United States, there hasn't really been a great articulation as to what the actual objective is. There also hasn't been a clear buildup of forces. So the U.S. didn't have as many forces in the Gulf that it had during the Iraq campaign and also during the first Gulf War. That, coupled with the lack of an objective that's clear and identifiable, that is a source of concern.
President Trump backed out of a 2015 deal struck between Iran, the U.S., and European powers over Iran's nuclear development, with this Trump administration turning around and now requesting those same, if not stricter, terms. That dynamic, Bapat said, will likely play a role in how Iran responds to the U.S. and Israel's demands, especially considering the countries attacked during active negotiations.
I think the way Iran is interpreting this is that the U.S. is just not a credible bargaining partner, which is another reason why you might see bargaining failures, that no matter what they do, it seems like the United States is going to exploit them, which puts them in a position where they should not accept negotiations. So this has put us in a precarious spot. If there is to be an end to the war, there has to be a credible bargaining partner, and right now it doesn't look like Iran views the U.S. as that.
Bapat said he believes the best-case scenario for a clean stop on the U.S. side of the conflict has already passed, which was after killing the supreme leader in the initial wave of airstrikes. But with the war dragging on, both UNC political scientists said the approach appears to rely on an uprising in Iran against the new regime that would allow the U.S. to install a leader more favorable to their demands. Lares said he sees that as, quote, wishful thinking that goes against the outcomes of past conflicts in the region. Instead, the professor said it could echo the U.S.'s wars against Iraq and Afghanistan, where oppositional forces dug in and prolonged the conflict.
The worst-case scenario is that Iran will not give up, that they will have more weapons or fight more missiles, and that that war will continue forever. You know, exactly like a forever war, which Trump criticized Biden, Obama, and all the others for, and I think we may well see that.
Meanwhile, the consequences of the two-week war are already being felt. In addition to the cost of human life, the environmental impact of burning oil depots, and the high resources spent on the warfare's weaponry, Bapat said the resulting price changes from the global oil supplies being impacted are likely to be felt in dozens of ways.
You're looking at higher food prices, you're looking at higher medicine prices, and there are several countries that are not equipped to handle that kind of a big shock like this. The U.S. might be able to absorb it, the Europeans might be able to, but several states, especially in Africa and other parts of the world, might not be able to handle something like this. So this is a recipe for social unrest.
For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Brighton McConnell.